Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. A look at changes in environmental policies on local, state, national, and international levels. With us is Astrid Carapetasso. Astrid Carapetasso is assistant professor at the Political Science Department at the University of Freiburg. She's the author of The Greening of Free Trade and co-editor of Climate Resilient Development. Welcome to the Scholar's Circle, Astrid Carapetasso. It's great to have you here with us.
Thanks, Maria. It's great to be here.
So you've been studying environmental policy, sustainability, climate change, NGOs. I thought we should talk about some of the things that you found. One of the things that I've noted from your work is this idea of diffusion, because so many of the policies, environmental policies, look the same. How does this happen?
Yeah, that's true. That's why I got interested in the topic as well, because worldwide you see a convergence of policies, and so they become similar. And the question is, yeah, that's a good question. How does it work? You got a lot of networks, global networks being around, exchange between governments, so bilateral relationships, but also like sort of interregional, like the EU dealing with other countries, either on a bi-regional level or also with regard to, for example, EU-ASEAN. How does it happen? It's difficult to say. It's a tricky research agenda because you can find correlations between the policies and you can try to work your way through and find out who talked to who about the policies. And actually what I wrote about China was that China was really interested in getting some ideas how they could deal with their environmental problems. So there was a regular exchange, and they looked for other countries regarding best practice. And
I hope nobody's looking at Donald Trump's policies.
Well, he hasn't had any really good ideas so far. So
ideas, yes.
Yeah, well, he always needs Congress to support him. So you've just seen that. I mean, that can be a tricky issue for him. So we hope the best for the environment and climate change then. But I think actually with the United States, I'm not an expert on this, but it's quite interesting to see that on the sub-state level, you've got a lot of best practice and really good ideas. So California would be a very good example for that. And also that this triggers further cooperation among the states, so which is quite good. So the question is, do changed federal policies have a real impact on the state level or not? So this is a thing you have to see. But also like upstate New York was pretty tough on fracking issues. So you could hope for other initiatives. So
yeah, right. So I wonder also, you're talking about, for example, EU climate strategies being one of them that are inspiring others. Mm. Are these superior policies on climate? Are there something that, you know, other countries should be following?
I think you have to contextualize it. And this is what a lot of countries do. So they look for new ideas and see whether you have front runners. And the EU always wants to be the front runner because it has got quite a strong mandate in terms of climate action. As a European, you could also say, okay, we could still do better. But it's a start, and it's quite ambitious. And I think like Asian countries, for example, they look at these policies and figure out how it would work for their countries. Like, I mean, emission trading scheme is also quite a good example that some countries adopted, including New Zealand. The question is always, and we come back to the diffusion thing and convergence, is do they also learn from the mistakes made by others? Because obviously the emission trading system did not work too well in the European Union in the first run. So they made adjustments. And so when other countries look at these policies, for example, and think about their own countries, they have to figure out whether they could do it another way. So, and I think that's really important.
I know that one of the things that you have been looking at is the environmental NGOs and community groups and other non-governmental entities. What is the role that you think they're playing in all of this?
I think they are quite important players because for several reasons. So on the one hand, they often have a very good expertise in various issues because they focus on these issues. So they don't have a whole bunch of things they have to look at, even though if you look at environmental NGOs and what they do, it's quite a lot. So they can gather information and also make governments accountable for their action. So they are really important watchdogs. to see whether the government does it the right way or not. And also that the means they have, like legal action, informing the public, and also that they, to a certain extent, represent the public. So some of their concerns, some of their interests. I mean, you can challenge that, but in general, I think it's not a false thing to consult with them. It's just a matter of who do you consult with, and I think that's the trickiest part of it.
You gave a talk here. You talked a little bit about the deep history, mm-hmm. and I was quite surprised at how far back some of these environmental movements, when they began. Can you give us a little bit of that history?
It started quite early in the 19th century, and even longer back in history. They realized that, for example, cutting down trees in an unsustainable way is not the way it should go, because otherwise you don't have any resources anymore. And in the 19th century, with the Industrial Revolution, that was quite an issue, because you had air pollution, and that was pretty hard, and people suffered from it. And so you had this on the one side, and also you had the conservation side, so that they realized, actually we are losing some of our valuable resources and also like species. So they tried to protect that. And so therefore the environmental movement has quite a long history.
You used a couple of phrases during that talk that I thought were quite interesting. One was intellectual competition. What did you mean by that?
Well, intellectual competition in terms of what I've just said, in terms of having their expertise. So mostly it's sound research that they do and scientifically based. And so they come up with alternatives. So, I mean, as you know, research and science is a contested field. So you need different solutions to different problems. And if you have sort of a biased focus, sometimes it's good to have a different perspective on it. So this is probably what I meant by intellectual competition.
Do you think that it's partly these NGOs that have made the diffusion process happen, why there are some similar policies as well?
Actually, no.
You don't? Well,
some of them, so like conservation activities, I think that's really good in terms of cross-country and transboundary cooperation. But I think the major policies in terms of, let's say, air quality, transport, climate change, etc., are finally made by governments. So it's actually the exchange governments have, but NGOs can really help to promote the alternatives that they have. And what they can do is they can exchange best practice also on the local level. And I think that's quite crucial, because in the end, someone has to implement all the ideas and all the policies. And where is it done? On the local level. So it's good when you have the NGOs networking, and also on a global scale to exchange information about government policies. So to have a strong political leverage on the international level as well.
Do you think that they played a role in the trade agreement starting to get a little bit greener? I know this is a topic you researched a long time ago, but was that one of the factors in driving environmental sustainability into some of these trade agreements?
I think there were various factors involved, but certainly one was that they had a good exchange with government officials on this. So it played one role. It's not the most exclusive one, I would say, so that it was that single reason why they pushed for environmental agreements, in addition to New Zealand's green and clean image, which is suffering a bit at the moment, given the OECD report that's recently been released. But I think there was a wider awareness of environmental issues. I mean, all the side agreements I worked on in the past, they are binding agreements, but you don't have sort of a dispute settlement mechanism dealing with these issues. So that might actually change, because I had a look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I worked on that long time ago, and it wasn't that important. Now it got really important, and actually the clauses they have on the environment, they are again binding, and you can also challenge it. So there are some changes, I think, and it certainly has to do with the fact that also the World Trade Organization has a long trade and environment history. So they moved it a little bit in terms of framing towards more climate change. But the agenda is basically the same. And there have been arguments about trade disputes and the environment. And so this goes hand in hand a little bit. And also the country itself maybe has a better understanding of what it means for the environment if you increase free trade.
Finally, I wanted to get a sense from you if you think that these policies, both the international ones related to trade and these others that are being diffused out and copied from one another, are we doing enough?
That's a good question. I think you can always do more. When you see how the world looks like, and also, I mean, the climate negotiations have been there for a very long time, and it's a lengthy process, and it's pretty slow. I'm quite pleased to see that quite a lot of action actually happens on sub-global levels. And also, for example, the cities have realized that they should have a stronger position in international negotiations and relations, and they have their partnerships and exchange knowledge and best practice. And I think there's still more room to do more. So we'll see how it will work out. Hopefully, policies get more ambitious.
Well, Astrid Karapetasio, thank you so much for being with us here on the Scholar Circle.
Thank you for inviting me.
Astrid Karapetasio is assistant professor at the Political Science Department at the University of Freiburg. She's the author of The Greening of Free Trade and co-editor of Climate Resilient Development.